Can I ask the panel to be seated, please? It is my pleasurable duty to introduce Desiree McGraw. And Desiree is the executive director of the Jean Sauvé Foundation at McGill. And she has a long history in the business of environmental issues, including being a student representative on the Canadian delegation to the Rio Conference in 1992. She's very young. So, Desiree, you have a pinch hitter.
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you, Bob. I had the opportunity and the honor, really, to work with Bob Slater, who was largely responsible for the success of the Canadian delegation in Rio at the Earth Summit in 1992. So it's an honor for me to be here today and to have been asked to moderate this closing panel of this tremendous conference regarding new ways of thinking about water. So what I will do is I will introduce, I'll sort of lay out some of the ground rules, and then I'll introduce the speakers in turn. We've already worked out in advance, based on the topics, what would make the most sense in terms of order. Each speaker will be given 8 minutes, or I'll give you an 8-minute warning, up to 10 minutes, to present their views on this topic. Some of the issues that they've been asked to address or think about in their remarks are, why are long-term core issues such as water difficult to get onto the political agenda in the absence of a crisis? Should Canadians develop a new way of thinking about water? Is there an impending water crisis in Canada? If so, is there a need for a pan-Canadian water strategy? What are the different perspectives? So very much looking forward to not only the panelists' remarks, but a discussion. We look forward to a lively discussion. So what we'll do is I will start, based on the order agreed in advance, we'll start with Tim Morris, who's program officer for Freshwater Resources Protection with the Walter and Gordon Duncan Foundation. And you can read more about his work in the program. So I'd like to turn things over to Tim Morris.
Thank you, Desiree, and thanks a lot to the McGill Institute for organizing such a wonderful event. It's certainly great to see that they've identified water as a key public policy issue and ripe for discussion. Now, I have to confess, it's a little bit of a daunting task to talk about new ways of thinking about water following 20 of the leading Canadian experts have already said everything there is to say about water issues. So luckily, when I was preparing for the conference, I decided I wasn't going to talk about new things. I was going to talk about an old concept, but one that I think is kind of essential for any progress on a new water strategy approach and for implementing some of the great new ideas that people have had. That concept is a very complicated one. It's called accountability. For me, it kind of comes back to an old adage that my grandmother used to use. And she used to say, grandson, actually, she used to call me Tim. She didn't call me grandson. She used to say, Tim, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. And what I mean by that is we actually have a lot of very good water policies on the books. You know, good water policies, good laws. But the problem is they're not being effectively implemented or enforced. And I think this touches on a number of things that people have already said today. So, in fact, if our water policies were puddings, I think they do very well on presentation, but a little bit lousy on the taste test. Now, don't get me wrong, there are definitely things to be optimistic about, and I think it's important to stay optimistic, as Rob said. We heard this morning the opinion polls, Nick Nanos talking about the fact that Canadians consider water to be our most important natural resource. And that's really quite significant. Also, something that's not been said today is that actually more than half of our provinces and territories now have their own water strategies. So we're in Quebec. Quebec has something called National Water Policy. Alberta has its Water for Life strategy. And BC has something called its Living Water Smart Plan. And in fact, new strategies are in development in the Northwest Territories, in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And then we just heard the good news that the Council of Environment Ministers has developed its own strategic water agenda. And in the throne speech of the last federal government, they committed to bolstering what's called their Action Plan for Clean Water, which used to be their national water strategy. And then something I think David is hopefully going to touch on here is the private sector has now identified new water technologies and using water efficiency as a key business opportunity. And something that's been mentioned a couple of times is that Ontario is looking to make this connection between environment and economy, which it did with its Green Energy Act, in water. So very recently the Premier announced it would be developing a new Water Opportunities Act. So it feels like, a little bit like Rob said, the stars are aligning, right? It seems like water's never been higher on the public or political agenda. And yet our scientists, folks like David Schindler, and many of our local communities are telling us that our water resources are not getting better. They're actually getting worse. And last week there was a poll from RBC and Unilever, conducted by Ipsos Reid, that said two-thirds of Canadians believe the conditions in our lakes are getting worse. And I think their concerns are justified. We saw the image of Lake Winnipeg last night from David Schindler. It regularly now has an algal bloom the size of Prince Edward Island, something that Maclean's called a toxic pea soup. This is something that's also familiar to Quebec, which has really been struggling with problems of blue-green algae in many of its own major water lakes. And also we're seeing worrying evidence that the Great Lakes are backsliding a bit again. Certainly Lake Erie, which is kind of the canary in the coal mine for the other lakes. Some may recall in the 1960s, Lake Erie was declared to be a dying lake. And there's troubling signs it may be returning to those kinds of conditions again. And it's not just our lakes. We've heard about the South Saskatchewan River that crisscrosses the prairies, and the fact that in that river there's more water allocated for human uses than even exists within the river. And in some places, this means the river comes very close to running dry. There's also the troubling fact that one in six of our First Nations communities suffer boil water advisories. And nationally, we have a $31 billion water and wastewater infrastructure deficit, something that Stephen talked about a little bit. And then just to compound things, we have this problem with climate change. And as a number of people have said, climate change impacts are going to be felt through water. And so the problems I've just described and that others have described as well, they feel like they're just the tip of the iceberg. So what's happening here? I mean, these are really troubling trends for a country that's regularly described as water rich, and it looks like it has progressive policies. What I think is happening is that we have some good water policies, but as I said at the top, they're not being effectively implemented. On the last panel, they talked about the 1987 federal water policy. That water policy was a world leader. It was ahead of all the other countries. And yet in the early 1990s, the policy was essentially shelved. And since that point, there's been a steep decline in federal interest in water. As a result, provinces started to pick up the weight that the federal government had left behind. And so we have the Alberta Water for Life strategy, for example. Again, it won global plaudits, and I think it even won some world awards. And yet critics say today it's undermined by a lack of legal foundation, too heavy reliance on voluntary compliance, and also inadequate funding and capacity support, something that plagues many of our water policies. So what it seems like we've had are these waves of really high sort of political interest in water, but the real problem has been with sustaining momentum and getting follow through on what I think are well-intentioned promises. So one prescription for what people might call an implementation deficit is to enhance accountability. And there are three key ways where I think this could make a difference. The first is accountability to our watersheds and our ecological systems. And so the concept here is really simple, right? If your water policy is aiming to protect and conserve the watersheds, surely your performance metric has to be the actual conditions in our rivers, lakes, and aquifers. And yet, based on the information currently available, except perhaps in Newfoundland, because it sounds like they developed a neat new website, it's not possible for anybody to really gauge in a comprehensive way the health of Canada's watersheds. And in fact, most water policies are not designed to generate this information. Now, contrast this to other countries, Australia, South Africa, the European Union, where they have these comprehensive but easily communicated rating systems. And a great example, actually, is South Africa's River Health Program. I'd encourage you to get on Google and look up this website, because you'll be shocked at the quality and comprehensiveness of the information. And they use one of these things that it's a simple sliding scale. So they rate their rivers natural, good, fair, or poor, and then they publicly report on these conditions. So one thing our governments could do, and perhaps it's through CCME, is to coordinate to produce annual watershed or river health reports that actually demonstrate to Canadians whether the policies are working or not. Okay, the second one is accountability to citizens. Providing accessible information is clearly a necessary part of accountability, but it's not going to be sufficient. We have to engage the public in decision-making processes. And the last panel talked quite a bit about how government can do this through stakeholder engagement and shared governance. But I think also we, as non-government actors, have a critical role to play here. Because one of the things I think we don't have yet in Canada is kind of a strong movement that is engaging citizens and raising awareness about the importance of policies to their enjoyment of water. And this citizen movement has actually been a central driver in major reforms in other countries. Now, fortunately, there's a lot of scope for engagement and rich public debates around water, because people connect with water, right? It really means something to them. And they connect with it in some really interesting and different ways. So it might be fishing on your favorite stream or growing crops to make a livelihood. Or it might be the spiritual values that are so important to our Indigenous communities, and I hope Larry will have a chance to talk about that. So finding ways to connect with these different values at a community level and then providing tools that empower citizens is essential for strengthening accountability. The third and final piece I want to talk about is an economic accountability. And I don't need to spend a lot of time on this because people have already talked about it. But it's critical, I think, that we understand water's role in the Canadian economy. And my guess, it's only a guess because we don't have the studies to show it, is that water is much more important to our economy than anybody really realizes. Certainly, it's a critical input for most of our major industries and also for other economic activities like agriculture and tourism. And then the other piece of this is finding ways to internalize the externalities. So those situations where we have pollution or depletion, but the cost of those things are not being incorporated into our economic decisions. And again, we have good examples from the European Union, Australia, and Stephen Renzetti talked a bit about this. So just to wrap up, one of the other questions that we were asked is, does Canada need a pan-Canadian water strategy? And my answer to this would be, yes, I think we do, for many of the reasons talked about today. We need to address jurisdictional fragmentation. We need common standards and guiding principles and a vision. Again, Rob talked about that. We also need a level playing field for our businesses and equity for our communities. But in order to avoid the same implementation deficit that has plagued our water policies for the last two decades, we would need the strategy to be founded on a bedrock of accountability. That's accountability to the watershed, to our citizens, and in our economic decisions. So I'll leave it at that. I'm already over time. Sorry. Thank you very much.